are listening to Fast Track Podcast, the place to be to fast track your personal finance or fast track your business or both. Through a series of conversations with those who have learned it, done it, and made it. Before starting the episode, I have very exciting news to share with you. I am collaborating with financial imagineer Matthias Richter to launch the Fast Track Money course. This 6-week online course is designed to help young professionals in their 20s to early 40s to learn how to save more, earn more, and invest, using money as a tool to fulfill your dreams. We teach you the proven method that Matthias has been using himself in the last 20 years and achieved financial independence. So sign up today on fasttrack.life/moneycourse to transform your relationship with money from today. Hello everyone, you are listening to the first Fast Track episode in 2022. And in this episode, I invited Matthias Richter, who is a super experienced wealth manager helping hundreds of millionaires to manage their investment. But he's also the coach for Fast Track Money course that he's helping every single individual student who join our course to understand how money works and how to save, earn, invest, and build a healthy financial future. So he is also named Financial Imagineer, in case you're wondering who is Matthias Richter. And the reason why I invited him to the show, because I want to extract his brain to understand what happened in the market in 2021. And also what is the outlook for 2022 and how you as an individual investor can be better informed to approach investing. So welcome to Fast Track Podcast, Matthias.
Thank you very much for the super great introduction. Very happy new year to you as well. Happy 2022. Let's see what this year has in the cards for us.
Yeah. So COVID has not been eliminated this year, not yet. So although the market was not so depressing compared to 2020, as we remember, you know, in March, everything dipped, but there are still some major events that we should take note. So in your words, how would you describe the financial market in 2021?
Okay, well, maybe COVID is the big topic here. I also believe it will not be eliminated at all. It will just become an endemic, from the pandemic going into the endemic. So we will have to learn how to live with the virus. But maybe that brings me also to the main topic on 2021. I believe in the early 2021, there was a lot of euphoria. People were very happy to know that there is a vaccine or something we can do against the virus, other than lockdowns and doing all the silly things that maybe hold the economy back, right? And however, later we figured it's not good enough. Maybe not enough people got the vaccine, or it still spread, it go here and there and then infect again people. So it was a nervous market. If you probably ask me for one word, it's maybe nervous, but the second one still, it was a good year. It was actually a very good year. And the events probably, there were like 2-3 events. Maybe not many people took note of those. One was maybe the turnaround of interest rates together with inflation. Maybe the inflation, some of you start to feel at the moment in your pockets. If interest rates start to go up, your future purchasing power with cash is eroding, and that is also driving equity valuations. So especially growth stocks, stocks that probably did very, very well before, they suddenly got discounted, because the discounting cash flow method uses the forward interest rate. And if interest rates go up, the future earning value today will be lowered by a higher interest rate. So that was something in 2013, we called it like the taper tantrum, when the Fed was closing down the money gates. And this year, actually, the fear of that repeated, but it just within a few weeks, we were above that again. So it's a nervous market on off. You could see like how travel stocks rebounded very quickly in the early year. And then later when summer came and things turned around, they went down again. So on off, nervous, forward, backward. And yeah, COVID is still here, like you said. Let's see what this year has in the cards on that side. I believe the latest variant probably could be, I'm now a little bit bold to say that. I hope it's like an early Christmas gift it started before Christmas, and maybe it's milder than whatever happened before, and eventually it will reach the whole population. So if that goes through, we should all build up natural immunity over time, and then maybe we can finally close the book of this pandemic, I hope.
And you mentioned the Fed increased the interest rate that had a direct impact on, you know, the Fed
did not increase the interest rates yet. They simply changed the projection of when they believe they will do it. So they talk about what they have to do. And the Fed has a mandate of countering inflation in a way and of allowing for full employment. That's the mandate of the Fed. And unemployment rate came down tremendously. If you look at the United States, it's below 5% again. If all goes according to the plan, the projections look at even lower than 4%. There have been tremendous job creation again after the big job destruction in March 2020, which was also once in a century kind of an event. And now, because we go back to more full employment, and at the same time, we still have like disruptions in the supply chain. So you cannot get things as easy as you used to be able to get these from Asia. All the pricing went up, right? So the shipping prices are up.
Construction.
Raw material, construction, yeah. All these things are more expensive. And now if you have full employment, people are also able to ask for higher wages, right? And that will drive up inflation even more, because if once you have a temporary inflation, that's one thing. Temporary inflation, you can actually wait until it's over. And then if there's a bottleneck or something, it will be over at one point in time. But if you start to increase salaries and people get more paid, you cannot go back and say, now it was temporary. Sorry, we cut your salary back to normal. That will not happen. So some things are here to stay. And that's the interesting point, because we haven't had probably salary raises in this kind of dimension for many, many years.
And when you,
good. Yeah?
When you mentioned the interest rate and inflation, you know, in the US, would that have an implication on the world economy or in the other countries? What's the trend you're seeing in Europe?
Okay, maybe the US dollar is still the world's number one reserve currency. And if the floodgates are closing from this unlimited money creation, it affects everyone on this planet. That's number one. It will simply affect it, because it has such a huge magnitude. If they print money and have open money for everyone, liquidity, right? And this one is starting to close. And because of that, interest rates, especially the longer ones, they are increasing slowly, but not too high yet. And if you look at Europe, I believe here we will have a different problem, because sooner or later, maybe the central bank, the ECB here in Europe, might also want to do something on this side. But here we have another situation. We do have some countries inside the Eurozone that probably are still highly indebted. If you look at Southern Europe, so eventually the European side will not have the same capability to raise interest rates anytime fast without hurting some of their members.
What do you mean by hurting the members? If they increase the interest rate, how would that hurt some of the members in the country?
Some of the Southern European countries, if you look at their indebtedness, they are barely able to pay or serve the interest rate. If it's
1%. The higher the interest rate, the more interest they have to pay.
Correct. Yeah. And the harder it will get to refinance their debt. Remember 2011, it was after the financial crisis. We had the euro crisis. It was all about Greece, then Cyprus. And then some people start to say there is more Southern European countries with a similar system. So they built like an umbrella to protect the whole euro construct. And here I'm personally extremely curious to see what's going to happen. I believe the euro is here to stay. I also believe they will not break up or do something, but they have to come up with some kind of solution before they go up with interest rates. Otherwise, you could basically draw like a line, a horizontal line from east to west, and say everything south from here would have issues if they go up with interest rates.
Mm-hmm. And for example, if we have listeners or audience from Southern Europe, right? Mm-hmm. How can they protect themselves from any potential risks because the country they are living in are highly indebted?
Well, one thing is, if the country is highly indebted, you probably feel it already with higher taxes. People usually in these countries have to pay higher taxes. One other thing is, they will go to look for where they can take the money from some places that you cannot move. So in some places there, I saw that property taxes suddenly are getting increased because you take from where you can take, and you cannot move your real estate abroad. Your real estate is based in one place. And real estate is usually also one of the good things that helps you protect against inflation. So it's a zero-sum game. But if your house goes up in value like 20, 30%, you cannot buy anything with that if you live in that house, right? You could just go back to the bank and borrow more if they want to give it to you. But if they don't, you have an issue, right? And if the government starts to tax house owners more, this could create a higher problem. On the same side, though, it's a good thing to have real assets in this world where you can actually print unlimited money to flood the markets with. So it will be interesting. Maybe gold would be something. Of course, we talk about cryptocurrencies, whereby that's different dynamics there altogether. But there will be a run into some places where people feel more safe, because all this COVID debt, to go back to the beginning of this podcast, COVID raked up so much debt in the last few months. Who's going to pay the bill? Going to pay the bill? It at the moment, it looks like inflation will pay the bill, which is also something that can work out. So simply imagine you have 5% inflation each year. After 5 years, you actually erase 25% of your debt.
How does it work? Can you explain?
Sure. Okay. So let's say you borrow 100 today, and each year the 100 loses 5% in purchasing power. So 1 year later, you're at 95. And now I approximate a little bit. There is compounding at play and so on. But after 2 years, would be 90. After 3 years, 85. After 4 years, it will be 80. After 5 years, your debt is only worth 75% of the original amount in terms of current purchasing power. Of course, at the same time, we assume salaries go up, real assets value go up. But actually, this way, your nominal debt, the number of debt, it is still 100, but probably the people around you now earn 125 or 130. So your debt in relation to the total GDP, the gross domestic product, and the economic power of your country has actually shrunken without you actually paying back a single cent.
Uh-huh. So that's why I think it's related to the other YouTube live we did, is that why buying houses, having mortgage can hedge you from inflation.
Correct. Yes, 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 yes.
Because then if the value of your assets or anything, it's due to inflation, it loses value. But then actually your debt is also shrink in a way.
In terms of purchasing power.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
The debt, the number looks the same, but you can think of it the same way. Like I think in the podcast there, I mentioned about the grandma bought a house for 50,000. If she borrowed 40,000 and never paid back a single cent. Now today the house is maybe worth 1 million.
Yeah.
And in relation to the house value today, the debt is just 4%.
Yes. And but, I remember. Yeah. You know, you know how the real estate market, how crazy it was in China. So people buy real estate 10, 20 years ago, and then their monthly mortgage payment is 1,000 Chinese yuan. And probably back then, 1,000 Chinese yuan would be like a large number. And nowadays, 1,000 is nothing. And if people are still paying back mortgage, it's due to inflation. 1,000 is nothing, right? Mm-hmm. So would you recommend, if possible, having real estate as part of the total portfolio, asset portfolio?
Yes, I would highly recommend to have real estate, but please be careful. We are probably at a very high level at the moment. So if now we talk about the floodgates are closing and interest rates go up, there's a lot of speculation going on. And I'm not saying there will be a crash in 2022, but sooner or later, things will deflate again. The correction, there will be some corrections. I'm quite sure in this year now, 2022, there will be a point in time where we will see a 5, 10, maybe even 20% correction in asset prices in a way or another. And if you are going now in with leverage to your throat, you know, like as much as you can, it could be a very dangerous thing to do. But if you say, okay, I do have the holding power, so that's the differentiator, you don't want to be in a situation where half a year from now, let's say, really interest rates suddenly go up to 4% or more, and the banks come clean up their mortgage portfolio. You don't want to be the first person they have to call and say, sorry, Mr. X or Mrs. Y, we need a little bit more cash to top up your mortgage. Otherwise, we have to foreclose your property in the market tomorrow. You will be ending up very badly. This wouldn't be the first time this has happened, and very sure it will not be the last time. We always have these cycles of debt expansion and then shrinking again. Something like this, I don't know in which form we will see it. I don't have a crystal ball myself. I just want to say, on one side, yes, having real estate is helping you to protect against inflation. But on the other side, make sure you have the holding power and you can hold it maybe for 5 years. From that perspective, I still think it's a good thing to do.
Yeah, I want to highlight the holding power, this concept, because in our money course, we talk about one of the mistakes people usually make when buying real estate is, you know, buying too many houses or buying too much houses, depends how you
buying too much house. Yes.
Yeah, buying too much. Not that you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, but too much. So would you like to surely explain that? So that's also related to the holding power. Yeah.
I think the concept here is, if you are a first-time home purchasing person, a home buyer, the usual way is you probably save up, I don't know, let's say you save up 100,000 and then you run to the bank and say, hey, I got 100,000 saved up. How much mortgage can I get? And then you calculate with 80-20, 80% leverage, and 20% is your equity. And the bank will say, oh, with 100,000, you can get a 400,000 mortgage. You can buy a 500,000 property. The same thing with 1 million property. Maybe you need to save up 200,000 and so forth. And you would borrow 800,000. The issue here is, if you do that, you have zero wiggle room to the downside. Of course, you have the upside. You have the maximum leverage. But if there is a market crash the next day, you may have a big issue. We have seen cases like that in 2007, 8, 9, where the real estate market in the US crashed. In Switzerland, we have seen cases like that in the 1990s, where the big housing market crash was. And each country has similar stories to that. You mentioned China before. This will be something very interesting. I'm following Evergrande and all these other developers. They even had to kind of destroy finished buildings because they didn't have the cash to finish them completely or sell them. It was really, really weird. So there could be some new kind of triggers into this market that we don't see the full outcome yet.
Okay. And maybe some audience might ask, okay, if the market is at its peak, let's say housing market, should I wait till it goes down, then I enter the market, or what should I do?
Well, if you have a comfortable situation to pay the rent, maybe you can wait a little. Or if you look at the cash flow terms, let's say how much rent do you pay every month? And at the other side of the story is, of course, interest rates are still super, super cheap. So at the moment, you could be still locking in a very, very low mortgage rate for a longer time. If inflation really stays elevated, who knows? Maybe in 1 year from now, you cannot get the same interest rates anymore. And then if you wait until that happens, yes, maybe you will get the house a little bit cheaper, but you probably have to pay more every month for the next 20 years. So there is a fine line to say what to do exactly, but look at your cash flow situation. If you pay rent, let's say you pay rent $1,000 per month, or you could just get a mortgage for $500 per month because the interest rates are so low. It's an interesting thing doesn't matter what the real estate underlying asset price will do for that, because you will free up $500 of your monthly cash flow for like 20 years or more. On the other side, what to do if you look at what is maybe not so elevated? I was looking at commodities again. Gold didn't really move up too much recently. Silver is actually lagging still. That could be something very interesting to see. Gold mining stocks are rather on the low end for my taste compared to what inflation is indicating. The other thing though is simply look at dollar cost averaging. If you want to buy into the market and invest, just start, you know. We don't have a crystal ball. If you are young, if you're listening to this, you're in your 20s or 30s, you have 20, 30 year of remaining time before you eventually need this money. Why don't you just get started?
In a nutshell, I think, can I summarize like this for average? So the point number one that I think is very interesting for the audience is the holding power, that buy something within your own capability. Don't buy to the maximum, and yes, even if interest rate changes, you will still be okay. So buying too much houses will be a trap. And then the second interesting point is that if you are interested in buying a real estate, then considering how much you are paying for rent right now versus how much you are paying for mortgage right now, because I don't know how is it in the US, but in Switzerland the interest rate is really, really low. Would it be similar like this in other countries because of the overall global economy?
In most countries, it's very close to all-time lows. But I think in a country like the US, you cannot get a short-term interest rate mortgage like that. You have the overnight interest rates, like here it's called the SARON, or it used to be LIBOR or SIBOR or things like that. In Singapore, it's SIBOR. All these things are different from country to country, but you fix it in the US for like 15, 20, maybe even 30 years. And even with the current situation, I still think the interest rates are very attractive and low.
Okay. So in a way that if you buy a house or apartment within your own capability, you know, not to buy the maximum, and lock in the low interest rate, you will be able to benefit it for like 10, 15 years, right?
Most likely,
15 years later, and the interest rate will be much higher. But because you are buying it within the, you know, have a much bigger cushion, so you will not be forced to sell your apartment. So yes, I think that's a very good point. And the last point would be, you talk about, you know, the question about buy and when to buy, right? If someone decided to buy real estate, when is it they should wait for a few years or they should act now, is to evaluate the cash flow. If they can free up cash flow and use them to invest, might as well just buy it. And then you are already in the market rather than timing the market. Again, coming back to the first point, if you have the holding value, so why not?
Maybe if you are not sure how much house, we talk about don't buy too much house. I always like to say rather buy a smaller house first, then you are involved, right? You got your foot in the door. If the market moves up on a small house, good, you are part of it. You have these people, they say, I need to have the big mansion for 1 million or 2 million. And they keep saving their cash. And then each year they see actually their goal run away because inflation is just taking care of
them. They can never catch up.
And they will never be there. Yeah, you can never actually get your foot in the door. But yeah. And then they say, I'm not going to buy because I still cannot afford it. And then 10 years later, they still didn't buy. It's like a vicious circle. But if you buy your small apartment and then you save some money, you pay off the mortgage, and you invest the rest, right? It's also, you don't just put all your cash in your house. You should invest into stocks and other things. You build up a portfolio. And eventually, if and when the market has some issues, it's your time to act and upgrade, right? Then you will have the firepower, not just the holding power, to do something there and to upgrade your house.
I like that term, firing power. Okay, great. I think I have asked all the questions I can think about, you know, on behalf of our audience. If you have individual questions, feel free to leave a comment in the episode page, write me a message. If you have questions to Matthias, write him a message. You can find out his contact information on financial-imagineer.com. And if you're interested in learning more about how to manage your money, how to invest smartly, and how to design your own portfolio that is going to help you building a healthy financial future, we very welcome you to join the Fast Track Money course. This year, we're going to launch it full force, and it's already available on fasttrack.live/moneycourse. So we hope to see you there. And if you have any questions, feel free to write us. And so any last words coming from your side, Matthias?
Well, we never know what the future is bringing to us, right? But for an outlook 2022, I would say maybe the good news will be the pandemic will slowly fade away. Certain things will probably perform quite nicely. We still have some catching up, maybe in some travel names. On the other side, growth stocks, there will be maybe a segmentation between the ones that were short-term COVID profiteers. You had stocks like Peloton that soared from below 20 to above 100 in a few weeks and are back almost to where it started before the pandemic now. But you also have some stocks that maybe will be here to stay. I'm looking at, I don't want to mention too many names. I don't want to do single stock recommendations here, but it's a very interesting world. There will be some new winners emerging from all that. And by having exposure to this dynamics, there will be usually humanity advances the most during crisis. We will be most innovative if something big happens. It's usually the wars that did that before. Maybe this pandemic is similar. You see like what we could do with vaccinations and other things. I am still very, very optimistic about this decade, the 2020s. And stay invested, because if you have a broadly diversified investment portfolio, you profit if humanity is advancing, if we are improving, if we are moving forward. If you just sit on your cash, inflation will wipe away your purchasing power for sure. You will have a guaranteed loss on that side. But if you invest, yes, you will have the storms, you will have the uncertainty, but eventually the destination is a much more beautiful one than just holding on your cash.
That's very well summarized. And I have to say, maybe some of the sentences might sound very vague to some of you if you have not started investing. Don't worry about that. You know, there are lots of information on Matthias' website, lots of information on my website. And also you're welcome if you want to sign up the course, learn everything at one go. You would be able to understand. Yes, stay invested, stay the course, right? We will always say that, stay the course.
Yes, correct.
All right. Thank you so much for being here, Matthias, and Happy New Year, everyone. I hope you have a very prosperous year and start learning how to manage your own money and start learning how to invest and stay invested.
Thank you so much, Yasi.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Fast Track Podcast. Show me your support by liking this episode and sharing it with a friend. Join the Facebook group at Fast Track Podcast 1, or you can find us on Instagram, YouTube, and of course the homepage, fasttrack.life. See you in the next episode.